Hi, you're listening to the Full Life Podcast with Melanie Lynham. Jane lives in Brisbane, is a mother of four young children, and works part-time as one of the directors of a program run through Hope Centre Services called Mimi's House. Mimi's House works with schools to support vulnerable children, teaching them important life skills to help them with their social, emotional, and physical development. It is doing so much good in the city of Brisbane, and I was so inspired by this program that I wanted to sit down with Jane and talk about how it works, how these kids' lives are being changed, and perhaps God has placed a seed in your heart, an idea or a dream, and it is our prayer that today as you listen to this conversation, that that seed will be watered, that idea or dream will be colored in a bit more, and you will be stirred up and inspired to step out and take steps towards doing what the Lord has placed on your heart to do. We also talk about marriage, parenting, and the juggle of work mum life. So here's my conversation with Jane Hockey. Hi, Jane. Welcome to the Full Life Podcast.
Hi.
It's so good to have you here. And I just wanted to share with you a story right now. Jane and I were chatting. It's a Monday night. All our kiddies are in bed. And something, Jane, happened this afternoon with my second youngest, Mila, who's 2 years old. So I went downstairs just to, you know, it was after school pickup. You've got bunch of jobs to do. You know, there's washing. For us, it was feed the chickens and then make dinner. But while I was downstairs, something happened. When I came back upstairs, my four-year-old Eva comes into the kitchen in like this really like relaxed, non-dramatic, sing-song way, says, "Mom, Mila's painted the office with cream. It's on the keyboard, it's on the computer, it's everywhere." And just like saying it like, "It's no big deal." And I was like, "What?" And so I come around the corner and I'm heading towards the office, and then Mila comes out of the office and she's just standing there with this baby wipe, but she's just like, you know, like cleaning her hands as if to say like, "Job well done, finished." And then I go into the office and it was like the biggest mess ever. And I'm going to be honest, like it was covering, for some reason we had two computer mouses. So it was like all over computer mouses. It was all over this keyboard, like so thick. I actually don't think this keyboard is going to ever recover. Ever. Yeah. So happy, I was just wondering.
Happy Monday.
It's a good way to start. And I was like, I'm going to go make dinner. It's like, this isn't the too hard basket for right now. This can wait. But yeah, I was wondering, Jane, what's the biggest mess that any of your kids have made? Because remind me, how old are your kids?
Yeah, so I've got four children. My eldest is 9. That's Henry. My second is Daniel. He's 8. Then I've got Layla, who's 5, and Estelle, who's 3. And I actually think I got off scot-free for a while. I kind of like was like, you know, my kids, people tell stories of flour and rice going everywhere. And I was like, no, my kids haven't done that. Until my fourth child came along, and she has an obsession with pens and crayons, so your story resonates. And we were renovating our house and we were renting. And that was when she decided to find permanent markers and whiteboard.
No.
And yeah. One day she just did this like great big artwork that she was super proud of on a wall. And that day the landlord had to come and fix something.
Oh, yeah. So you found out.
Yeah. Well, we kind of scrubbed it. As it was a permanent marker. We scrubbed it as best we could. Mm-hmm. But it was like right under the switch that he was fixing. So, you know, I was like, oh, man. So I thought that was bad, but we were kind of renting and it was like a paint job.
Yeah.
When only a few weeks, so we'd move back into our house, which, you know, it's all new. You're like, wow. And I'm downstairs and Estelle, who's now 3, decided – she just came down, wandered downstairs, and she goes, "Hey, mummy, I've just stamped all of upstairs. And she had gotten a little red star that and stamped the whole hallway, all down the stairs, everything. And she was just so happy with herself, like didn't see anything with it.
Yeah.
And I just, I was just really proud of myself that I didn't raise my voice. I was like, you just show me where you've stamped.
Yeah. Was it easy to get rid of that?
Fortunately, it was. Baby wipes to the rescue.
Oh, my goodness. That's so good. And was that fresh paint too?
Yeah.
So,
and my heart was like, oh, no. Oh, no.
Yeah.
But she was just so proud of herself.
Yeah. It's hard to get mad at them when they create this beautiful masterpiece. It's just it's on the wall. Yeah. I didn't really
say that stamp went in the bin.
Oh, yeah. So my two-year-old, like, in her second year, she was just constantly, stamps were going in her mouth, stamps and texters. She like constantly had like a blue or, but yes, all the stamps eventually went in the bin, probably not as soon as they should have.
Yeah.
So how about we get started? Tell us a bit more about yourself, Jane. Tell us about what you do. Tell us who your family is. We've just heard about your children and where you live.
So I live in Brisbane with my husband, Carl, who is a vet who owns his own business and travels around servicing mainly dairy farms, working on their reproduction rates and stuff that I really don't know about. And, I have four children, as I've mentioned, and I work part-time for an organisation called Mimi's House. I'm kind of at the moment, this stage of my life, it's, you know, mum life and work life and home life is kind of consumes a lot of what I do. And then there's church and family and kids sport and kind of thing. So, yeah, I feel life's very full but very rewarding at the moment. I'm actually loving the stage of my children. I kind of am, you know, no teenagers yet and still kids that really still love me.
They still listen to you.
Still want me, still want to hug. It's actually a really precious time. And I think not that I've ever had older children than that, but I'd love to press pause on their ages for the moment because I do feel like all of a sudden they're just kind of, becoming a bit more independent, which is nice, but it's, that's me. And, you know, as I mentioned, I work for a program called Mimi's House. We work with really vulnerable children in primary school, so probably children about my age at the moment from prep to grade six. We work with them on their social, emotional well-being and really create an atmosphere. It's like, it's called Mimi's House because it's like going to your grandma's house, going to someone that just loves you unconditionally and provides that nurture that unfortunately some of these children are missing. So we really work on their social, emotional, their physical development, their friendship development and tools that will help them engage in life, but in particular at school. So what we want them to be able to do is engage at school.
Yeah, that sounds good. So how do you do that? Is that done off-site, like not in school, somewhere else after school?
So we have a site. It's actually during school hours.
Mm-hmm.
So the children, we have a house out at Rothwell and we have another site in Bowen Hills. And the children are picked up from school and they're taken back to school. So they're with us one whole day for a year. So, you know, on a Monday, instead of going to school, they come to Mimi's house.
So every week,
Every week they come. So we have, we have them quite a bit. I guess it's one-fifth of their schooling for the year. They come to our program. And yes, for about, well, six hours a day, but you know, it's still a bit of a drop in the ocean, really. We'd love to have them more if we could. Sorry, my, that's a little bit about our, you know, that program. And we have that, we have 6 days of operation. So we have it working five days a week on one site and 1 day a week on another site. And there's currently, I think, 56 children in our program.
Wow. And how many schools are represented?
So this year we've got 6 different partnership schools.
Yeah. 6 different partnership schools. Yeah. Wow. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And how many years has Mimi's House been going for?
We're in our 8th year. We're 8th year. So I think we've had, now I should know better than I say I think, but it's around 320 children have passed through our doors. So
320.
Yeah. So originally, you know, as different years, you know, sometimes we've had 30 children, and the last few years we've been at 60 children each year that we've had. So,
that's quite all at the same time, 60 children all coming in at the same time.
All in 1 week.
So days, 10 yeah.
the other day, 10, yeah. and then across 2 sites. So we have 10 on one, 50 on the other. Yeah. So,
Can I ask, how has, like, with the whole restrictions of social distancing affected what you have been able to do?
Yeah, so this has been, you know, like everybody, it's been a funny year for our program. When schools were operating face-to-face or they were in remote learning, we couldn't operate our program. But what we were very fortunate about is, like, my coordinators are amazing people who just go above and beyond, and what we were able to do during that time was do house visits, so we were still able to keep contact with the children and in actual effect probably built deeper relationships with them and their families, because, you know, when you visit someone or give them a package and, like, we'd, you know, make little activity packs, you know, all of a sudden everyone's disarmed, and the parents kind of, we don't often work with the parents as closely as we'd like, but, you know, you knock on their door, they'd be the ones that would want to talk to you, whereas previously it's always about their child or various things. So it was actually, while it wasn't ideal and there were elements of our program we haven't been able to do this year, it's been amazing at the level of trust we've gained so quickly with families, which we hope allows for continued growth with the children. And our kids were just so happy to come back to program when they could. So we had, as soon as we went back to face-to-face learning, 4 of our schools resumed sending their children, but then 2 of the schools decided, look, we just want to be a bit, you know, we want to keep them on site. But now term 3, everyone's back, which is great.
Yeah, so, that's great. Yeah. Excellent. Glad to hear that. So what are some ways that you do help them? You mentioned before that you help them with coping skills and psychologically and even with physical abilities and with friendships. Mm-hmm. What are some ways that you do help them?
Yeah, so, I mean, we have different measures that we look at, you know, as a program. We want to see them engage back at school. So we look at their attendance. Is their school attendance improving? Is their behaviour at school improving? What are their parents saying? So we kind of, you know, we gather a whole stack of data that we get. And, you know, probably 99.9% of parent feedback is, you know, that it's been such a great program for their children. We get teacher feedback and, you know, again, mostly positive. But what's pretty exciting is that we see, you know, attendance rates increase despite them being off-site, their attendance, because suddenly there's someone that's saying to them, and our staff are saying to them, school's so important. School is a great place to be at. You should be at school. You should be, you know. So we're kind of sending a different message that doesn't always get driven, unfortunately, from home. And also for a lot of our children, their just self-worth and their confidence is just really low. Mm. So we spend a lot of time just working on little skills where they don't give up. So, each time they come to our program, they play a little game called Minute to Win It. And, it's like the TV show Minute to Win It. But they're fun little activities, but each week they come, they have to do it. And who cares if they don't get it? But if they get it, how great is that? But often, as I said, their confidence is so low that they don't even want to give things a go. So it's just, making them or encouraging them to participate in something and giving them some level of success so that then, they can try that maths at school or they can try asking a question at school. And then, but the biggest thing I think we do is we teach the children that there is adults outside of their family or despite their family that they can trust.
Mm.
And unfortunately, there are many children that don't have too many people in their lives that they can trust. We had a girl start a few weeks ago and she has been through some, seen some horrific things, seen her dad stab her mum, dad's in jail, mum's moved back to New Zealand. She's now living with her older sister, who gratefully has taken her under her wings. But when she was asked who in your world you can trust, the only person she could identify was like a distant relative who she now and again goes to. So it's not, not her older sister. There was no school personnel. There was no, and I think for children, you need at least one person that you can go to and you can trust and, once you've got that. So, yeah, a lot of it's based around having adults in their lives that every week they turn up to Mimi's house, those adults are there, that they can behave badly, but those adults will still be there, that they'll keep coming back, they'll keep forgiving, they'll keep showing up despite what happens. So I think that's where we have the biggest breakthroughs is, these children just learn that there are people in their world that are safe. Mm. And so when they come to program, it's a safe zone for them, that we create a safe and secure atmosphere where, despite 14 people being in the site, it's not chaotic. It's clean. There's food on the table. Just a sense of calmness that, they're not, it's, to me it's a different world, but a lot of our kids are peering out the window when a car drives in, because in their world, when a car drives in, it could be the drug dealer, it could be the police, it could be, there's not that safety and security that, your children and my children might be used to.
Mm.
So, yeah. I don't know if I answered your question.
Yeah, well, so through... No, but it's great. It's good to hear about this. So like building their confidence through doing activities and giving them little wins in it as well. And yeah. So is it games that they pretty much do, like heavily chosen games?
It's a really set program. So, they come in... so it's a mixture of play based, these are children. Yeah. So we do a lot of play. We give them time to have free time. A lot of these children haven't learnt to play, but also some specific teaching around some skills that they need. So, I talked before about trust. So we explicitly teach about trust and identifying hopefully five people in their life that they can trust. We also do explicit teaching around, friends and how to be a good friend. We explicitly teach what to do with when your body is getting angry and you just want to explode, you know, like breathing. And, you know, there's a technique called milkshake breathing. So there's certain times of the day that they do some explicit teaching around skills that we want all of our children to learn. Mm. And some of them, this term, all of our kids are doing things around the thinking and the belief system that we want them to have about themselves. So I belong, I do belong. You know, that they belong in this world despite, you know, what's coming at them. You know, every child has a right to feel that they belong in a space. And, you know, it kills me to think that there are children that don't feel like they belong in for whatever reason, for home life or cultural or we've got 20% of our children this year Indigenous. So, you know, that is a different element as well. Do they belong in their school? Do they belong in this country? You know, that feeling. So, yeah, we do a lot of that. And then we, you know, this term, the children, we do a unit around MasterChef. We call it MasterChef. But we teach them some things that they could do simply that they could cook at home. So baked potatoes. That, you know, a simple thing, but that they could go home and replicate if they need to. And you would be surprised at how many of our children have 2-minute noodles for dinner or nuggets every night, or, you know, like they don't know. And so many of the parents say at the end of this, wow, I wish I knew that, or that recipe book that you sent home, which is, you know, baked potatoes or oven roasted vegetables or something that they are now using, like, and, you know, really simple basic things that, you know, we hope that, again, just helps these children survive and get through.
Jane, what do you think? Do you think that it's like a generational issue? Like, what do you think is, I mean, I know it's not just like a simple one answer, this is the cause, but do you think it's because of what their parents went through and their parents went through, that just that education of life skills, basic life skills, has not been passed down?
To be honest, I think it really all stems from a lack of hope and a unfortunate epidemic where we have got people who have addictions that they can't overcome, you know, drug and alcohol addictions or gambling addictions. We had a boy last year who was the most beautiful boy, and he would get dropped off to the TAB every afternoon. So, you know, just addictions. And, you know, I said before, I do think it's a lack of hope and it's an inability to break cycles. So either cycles of abuse or cycles of addiction. But, you know, we also think that that can be broken. And if we can help these children at least kind of the penny drop that, you know, there is another way for them to see that there's another way, that them to come to a house that is, you know, neat and tidy and dishes are done and that it's important to brush your teeth. You know, when they're on the program, they will literally brush their teeth with us each week. And sometimes that's the only time that they'll do that. But it's an important, you know, like, and you know, these are children who could be living next door to any one of us. One of our programs is less than 2 kilometres from where my personal family home was. You know, it's the state school next door to the state school I went to. And it's like, well, I wouldn't have seen that, but it's probably been going on for quite some while. And unfortunately, I think it's only going to get worse unless there's a change.
Jane, are there any other charities or organizations that do what Mimi's House do that you are aware of here in Australia?
Not that do what we do. There's a lot of good programs that are similar but in high schools. There are a lot of good children's charities that work with similar children, but not as intensive and not as long-term. And when I say long-term, we actually only work for them for 40 weeks. So, you know, most of them are referred because of, you know, child safety, and then they are in the, you know, it might be with a counsellor or a psychologist doing similar things. A lot of the time the therapy is around similar things that we do, but they might be 3 months just because that's what they're chartered to do. So, yeah, I'm not aware of any others. Okay. I believe that this is the only one.
It sounds like something that would be really valuable to have in every city around the nation.
Yeah.
Not just in Brisbane. Every
pocket.
Yeah. You know? Yeah, absolutely.
Constantly from school saying, how do we partner? How do we get our children into you? And they tell me the same story of, you know, children who are irregular school attendants, who have instability in food, whose parents don't communicate, and it's time and time and time again. So, yeah. We would love to replicate as much as we could. But, you know, like, it's just slow and steady. We want to keep doing what we can do for as long as we can. So, yeah, but, you know, we hope to keep growing too.
Yeah. Jane, you were one of the founders, weren't you?
So I probably would never use the term founder.
Okay, no, that's right. You were part of the board of what was it?
I've been, you know, the founders are a really incredible couple called Grant and Kim Austin, who the whole idea was really birthed from Kim's heart. She worked in schools as a chaplain and just saw this need. And I probably at the same time had been doing youth work in that same area. And, you know, I said before, my husband's a vet, I'm a teacher. And I think initially they were like, great, we're going to start a farm, we're going to do this, we're going to do that. You guys would be perfect, come on board. And as the kind of concept grew and we didn't go down the farm track, I chaired the advisory board for quite a few years. And as I started having children, I'd volunteer with my kids or my baby or whatever. And yeah, I guess just kept being around. And then when I had my last child, Estelle, I wasn't really ready to go back to work, and so did a bit more bits and pieces around the traps, and I was kind of asked to step up and help direct the program in more of an official capacity maybe 2 years ago. That's been my journey. Did not ever think for one minute I'd be doing this 8 years ago. Didn't know what I was probably going to do 8 years ago, but didn't think I'd be doing this. So.
And you're obviously very passionate about it, and it's such a good cause.
Yeah.
So Mimi's House started 8 years ago. I'm just wondering, like, it sounds like you obviously are very well trusted by these six schools, and you've got other schools calling you up. How did you, like, in the beginning, how did you actually get schools to trust you so much that they would say, hey, take our students a whole day a week and even take them off site? Like, that's a lot of trust that those schools put in you. And I can imagine that it wasn't like that right at the start. How did you build up?
Yeah, well, you know, as I said, you know, Kim was pretty amazing, and she'd been working in a school for many years as the chaplain. And she, when kind of the concept was just coming through, she went to the principal and they said, with this idea, and literally the principal said, let's make this happen. I'll give you classrooms, just do it. So I guess that was really the pilot of the program. And, you know, her and her husband and a volunteer from church. And I actually think for some time there was a Broncos player that volunteered in that pilot year, just kind of got in and did it on their own back, no funding, just did it. And then went, okay, we've got to, if we want to do this, we've got to seriously do this. And yeah, initially then there was another principal in another area who just really helped the program walk that journey, like got Education Queensland involved and said, look, you know, these are the people you need to talk to. And then they kind of helped us set those guidelines up. But it was really, yeah, trust. And there are so many principals out there that see the need because they've got children in their schools, and schools are amazing. Like, you know, like their ability to really wrap around families, which is not their core business to do, but a lot of the time they don't have the time and the funds to go to that point where they can do the explicit teaching that we're doing and give them a space that we're doing. So, yeah, schools have just, they're knocking on our doors, you know, now. And you know, you have to grow that trust. And as I said, Kim was phenomenal. She solely coordinated with a group of volunteers for the first 3 years. You know, her husband would mow the lawns and they'd clean, she'd, you know, run a full program, clean the full house, she'd do everything. But she also got results, and they'd see kids change. And then, you know, over time we've had, you know, we've been able to establish ourselves in a bit more of a sustainable way, employ more people, keep that vision alive, and yeah, replicate a little bit. So, but yeah, it's a trust thing, and, you know, we've got a duty of care to these children, and I think schools see it. But yeah, you've got, there's hoops you've got to jump through. There's principals that, you know, they need to come and see sites, and, you know, they've got to trust things down to our bus drivers, that they're careful, safe, that our vehicles are safe, you know, all of those things. And rightly so.
That's right.
So yeah, you've got to be careful.
Have you got some statistics there for me, also, for just that talk about the effectiveness of the...
Our biggest, you know, our biggest improvement is around school attendance that we've got data on. The data is really, I think we're at 56% increase in school attendance, and there's about a 64% improvement in classroom behaviour and engagement. So, you know, our children, you know, and not all children will improve attendance. It's actually not up to them. You know, they're the children. A lot of the time it's, unfortunately, their parents that have to get them there. But definitely an improvement in engagement and classroom behaviour is one of our noticeable ones. And I think we're about, on the last data from last year, it's about 64% improvement.
Fantastic. You know, that's huge.
That's
really huge.
And I think the things we're also really conscious about, now that's data, but we can knuckle down to each child, and you could say, you know, Dante was doing really well in program, but then Dad got out of jail. And, you know, that causes chaos in the home, and then all of a sudden he's suspended at school because he's done something. So we're really conscious that while there's always a story in data, that the biggest story is behind that and what's going on with the children. And I think, you know, we're very lucky our schools engage us well, and they get that, you know, they get those stories that,
yeah,
you know, we can't fix everything.
Yeah. That's true. So earlier on, you mentioned that one of the issues that these young people have is low confidence. As a mum, Jane, what would be some things that you do that you implement in your parenting that help you build the confidence in your own children?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. I think being really present is a big one. Just listening to them and that what they say matters. You know, that little story about their friend who's, I'll think of one today. My daughter's like her good friend got a haircut and it's at this level now. And, you know, it's not anything big, but that what she says matters and that I'm present and I care and I can hear it. And, you know, I think that's a huge one, that we in this generation where social media is so constant and can be so distracted, I think we've got to be really careful that we give our children time. But yeah, I don't know.
I like that. Give them time. I'm going to be aware of that tomorrow now.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's pivot a bit and talk a bit more about you. You've got four kids. Your husband sometimes works away. Yeah. How do you do that? How do you balance your time with kids and housework and, you know, just fulfilling normal life duties as well as fitting in work there?
Yeah. Well, firstly, synced calendars is very important. Mm-hmm. Because I get found out all the time when I've like booked something in, or, you know, in my head had, oh great, I'm going to go to the gym or something, and no, I'm away. So yeah, make sure your calendars are well synced. I think being really real and honest with myself and being able to identify what my triggers are has been probably a journey I've worked on. You know, fatigue, tiredness, what things my children might do that might trigger me, because, you know, I think we've got to realise that just because they're our children, we can still have personality clashes and things that just really frustrate us that they do. So, yeah, just kind of working out what they are and being able to do them. But, yeah, it's a juggle. For us as a, you know, marriage, it's, you know, as long as we're communicating well, we generally can get things done. You know, like I feel like we can always get through it. And generally me, I'll be honest, when I shut down, that it's, he's like, what, like, you know, I can't guess this stuff up. But, you know, as long as we're communicating and, identifying what each other needs, whether it's, but just my husband's really quite easy. If he needs to just go and play the guitar or something, or
that does it for him.
Yeah, I'm like, I need to go for a walk. I need to get out.
Yeah, yeah. You know, you mentioned that you've got. Yeah. Sorry. Yeah, you mentioned that you go to the gym as well. That would be something so good for you. Get out of the house, get some endorphins.
That's a new one for me.
Is it?
A new one. I've never done a gym before, but I'm really enjoying it.
Are you? Do you do classes or do you do your own workout?
Well, in September, I actually did some bad damage to my knee playing netball. So I've just, earlier this year, I had a knee reconstruction. Wow. And so I've kind of just started this gym that it's like 45 minutes, but he tailor makes my program, which is kind of why I'm going, because I don't know what to do with all those equipment things. I'll probably hurt myself even more. So but I love it. I love that I'm accountable to somebody, that he's pushing me. And otherwise I'd kind of just get on an exercise bike and just coast my way through something. So
yeah. Oh, good on you. That's really good. That's taking care of yourself. And you've got to do that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Important.
That's right. So is it a bit of an adjustment when your husband comes back at all for you and for the kids?
No. It's kind of...
He's not gone that long, like long enough for that too.
Not normally. But if he is away, do you know what's an adjustment is when he's often not here in the mornings. So I do, you know, school routine. It's more of an adjustment when he's there for those mornings. And I'm like, in my head, I expect that he knows what needs to be done.
Yeah.
I've got to learn not to have expectations, but unless I'm clear about them. Generally, no, the kids love him.
So with so many things grabbing for your attention and, you know, taking some of your energy, how do you stay consistent and passionate about your ministry / work?
Yeah. Do you know the biggest thing for me to stay passionate about what I do is making sure I'm not in program all the time. I've got coordinators that run it, but actually just going into program and seeing the kids and or hearing the stories and touching base with, you know, my coordinators regularly and my staff regularly, because it's that what, you know, I have to do a lot of boring stuff, you know, write 3-4 year goals, and it's like, you know, but you get with a child and you're like, actually, I need to do that, or I need to write that grant because that's going to make a difference to this child or this child or this child. And I think, yeah, it's the kids, it's their faces. I've got photos everywhere on my phone that I constantly look back on. And, you know, a story that really stuck with me a few years ago when we were in Africa, and, you know, it was a different kind of overwhelming feel over there, was you know, the story of the starfish, where you know, there's a boy walking along the beach and he throws one starfish back in the water, and then someone says to him, but there's so many more, why, you know, what difference do you think you can make? And he picks up one, another starfish, and he throws that back in, and he says, well, I made a difference to that one. And I think that's, for me, I'm like, if we can make a difference to another one, another two, another 10, another 20, then we've made a difference to another group of kids. And, yeah, that's probably what keeps me going.
Absolutely. Yeah. That's right. Because it's more than statistics, isn't it? It's more than numbers. Yeah. These are real people and real lives and real families that are being impacted. Yeah. That's great. Okay, so let's talk about marriage. Do you have any tips for how to nurture your marriage when you both have – you're both doing two separate things? So it's, you know, it's his veterinary business and he's on the road and you're not there with him and he's doing that, he's focused on that. And then you've got children and Mimi's house, and he's not a part of the Mimi's house, definitely a part of the children. So how do you come together and, you know, nurture your marriage?
Yeah, I think... Well, from a, say, work business perspective, we always decided that any big decisions we'd make together. So even though I'm not technically in the business on the day-to-day, if there's any big decisions, we normally chew them over together, and I generally know what, you know, what's niggling at him, and he knows the same with me, you know, I'm frustrated, I've just written a grant and I got a refusal, you know, like, so again, I go back to communication is a big one. But I think one of the things I'm really conscious of at the moment is that our children still go to bed early. You know, we've been kind of sticklers for, you know, really strong bedtime routines with our children. It doesn't always work. Like tonight, my 3-year-old decided that she didn't want to go to sleep, but you know, while I'm kind of enjoying that while I can, and they're going to still bed before 7:30, I've still got a few hours where it's just me and him that we can just chat through things. And we've got to be careful that we don't then go into our own zone and work or phone or, you know, scrolling or whatever. But, you know, that at least a couple of times a week we're just having a chat or making sure we've caught up and on the same page. Yeah, so, you know, we've toyed with ideas like date nights and various things, but it doesn't always work. Hmm. And it becomes expensive. And you've got to have the right person that's willing to look after four of your children.
That's so true.
Yeah. We make it work.
I have a friend who she lives just down the road and they also actually have four children. And I've recently asked her, hey, do you want to like swap babysitting? Like I'll look after your kids one night and you look after my kids. She's like, let's do it. So yeah. We're yet to do our first night, but I'm looking forward to that.
Do it. That would be great.
Yeah, babysitting swap. Yeah. So is there a scripture? I asked you this one in advance, so you're not, is there a scripture that has been resonating most with you lately?
Yeah, I think, since the coronavirus really hit Australia, Psalm 46:10 was something, you know, be still and know that I am God. And, you know, initially I was like, of course that's there because we're suddenly still. We can't do anything, you know, like everything's changed. But as I've really kind of pondered on it, it's actually no, the knowing of God is the part that's really knowing that God's got me in control, knowing that God's there for me, and the ceasing of striving, which then kind of has kind of led me on to Proverbs 16:9 around, and I'm going to read it because I get my verses muddled up when I'm on the spot. The mind of a man plans his way, but the Lord directs his steps. So, you know, I'm conscious that and my personality, I kind of like to plan, but I'm really conscious that I've got to let I can plan, but I've got to let God do his thing, and I would need to leave room for God to do his things, like leaving the margin and leaving, the God factor in it all. I think I'm just really conscious of everything, you know, of my children, over Mimi's house and the plans that, you know, we want to see happen. But, knowing God's got it all, but it all, that also really gives you a peace. You know, I think when that verse was written was in the midst of war, and to say, be still and know that I'm God, well, they were battling a fierce battle, but they could still say that because they had a peace and a comfort that only God can give. I think, you know, is a real one that for me has what's kind of been chewing away at me for the last couple of months.
I love that. That's so good. Yeah. Do you have any final encouragement my desire is that people listening to this episode are going to be just so stirred up about helping these children and these families and from whatever part of Australia they are in or around the world. I hope that right now they're wondering and they're thinking about, what can I do to help the kids in my community? And perhaps God is planting a seed or watering a seed that there is actually a charity that has not yet been started and is going to start as a result of this conversation. So, Jane, do you have any final thoughts or encouragement for somebody who may perhaps go ahead and start a similar charity?
You know, I think if it's been put on your heart, then, you know, go for it. The other thing is around just, you know, whatever you've got in your hands, do it with all your might. You know, if you've got a neighbour that's got a child that is something, you know, like you just just do something with it. Just, you know, sometimes it doesn't take a lot to do. And I think the verse I was trying to say before is Ecclesiastes 9:10. Whatever your hand finds to do, do it with all your might, because when you go over to a grave, there will be no work to do. And I guess I'm really conscious of that, you know, I'm nothing special. I'm plain Jane, teacher Jane, who, you know, I don't think, you know, there's anything great about me, but I just try to work at what I've got in my hand to do. I've worked with what's fallen in my hand. I've put up my hand and said, yep, that's been burning on my heart, I'll help out. And I think that's the same with anything. You know, if God has planted that seed, take a few steps and let him water it, but actually take those steps and step out and do it, because, you know, if God's in it, then it will keep growing and it will keep flourishing.
Absolutely. That's really good advice. Thanks, Jane. Well, I think that we've come to the end of our conversation. Would you like to pray for our listeners tonight?
Sure, I can do that. Heavenly Father, I just thank you for this opportunity to share a little bit about the story that you've taken my life on. And God, I just pray for anyone listening out there that, you know, if they've heard my voice tonight and a spark or a seed has been planted, that, you know, they'll give it to you and, you know, something will be birthed out of it. But God, you know, out my heart is that there'll be children across Australia that will have a hope that is greater than the circumstance they have right now. And God, I just pray that you will continue to birth ideas into people's hearts, just like Mimi's house was birthed into Grant and Kim's heart, that you will burn it into people's hearts and it will grow. And I just pray that you know, anyone listening out there, that the vision that you've given them, that they'll have the confidence and the faith to step out and walk in Jesus' name. Amen.
Amen. Thank you, Jane. Thank you so much for taking the time to do this interview.
No worries. Thanks for having me.
I hope you enjoyed this conversation. If you know somebody who would really benefit from listening to this episode, then click on the share button and send them a link. Also, I'd so love it if you could take the time to quickly subscribe and write me a review. If you want to get in touch for any reason, DM me on Instagram @Mel_Lynham. Talk to you soon.